Smith Show. Check out the website, therickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. So, interesting little tidbit today. A Republican legislator who evidently at one point had invited AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, to visit a mine in Kentucky. Basically saying, hey, we're come down here. We'll show you what life's really about. Has withdrawn that invitation. I guess doesn't want her to. I don't know, be exposed to other Republicans after what Bernie Sanders did on Fox. Maybe they're afraid to put her out in front of Republican voters. Anyway, the representative Andy Barr, James Comer offered the thing, and Andy Barr might step in place. It's just a weird thing. And I'm going, how hard is this? Take her into the mine, show her around, make your point. I don't know. Let's find out what's going on around the world. In Washington, D.C., Bob Ney, Talk Media News. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, thank you, Rick.
So, yesterday, the big news, obviously, Donald Trump, second veto, number two.
Yes.
Vetoed what Bernie Sanders had asked him on Fox News to sign. I believe he vetoed it simply because Bernie asked him on Fox to sign it.
You think?
I do. I kind of think that that's part of it. Had Sanders maybe said nothing, who knows which way it would have gone. I just think he's that kind of mindset. Because it was curious to me that it was immediately the next day.
Right. Well, I mean, when it comes to resolution, I mean, look, Trump is, they are so supportive of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, it's unbelievable.
I know. So you think he would have vetoed it no matter what, just because the Kushner and them have such ties to the Saudis and the prince and all that?
Well, here's the thing. Look, I mean, I don't know, what business ties there are or aren't, but the fact remains that it's a well-known, not open secret, it's a well-known fact that Jared Kushner calls Mohammed bin Salman a lot. And they have a relationship, which one would say, okay. But the problem that the Trump administration has had from day one, despite, some things they've done good on tariff, et cetera, is the business side. And if they had, his family remaining in the business, that's fine. I don't think he should have had to have, given away his business. But having them in the position in the White House of influence and the business is always going to raise questions. Questions were raised with Hillary Clinton in the State Department, Bill Clinton in the foundation. We all know that.
Right.
Well, this is the same type of thing. Questions will always be raised, except this is a different level. This is the entire United States government now and the way we operate and the Mideast policy, et cetera. And the close relationship with Mohammed bin Salman and Jared Kushner alone makes one question why this resolution was vetoed. Was it because of that? Because if you look at the answers, Rick, that the president gave, he gave the answer that, they didn't have the authority. Yes, they do under the War Powers Act. In fact, Congress, shame on them, hasn't exerted this in the past more, right?
No, absolutely.
In Syria and other cases, when they could have, and they've always complained, they did it. Number two, he said to save American lives. What American lives? This is Yemen. This is Saudi Arabia on one side and Iran on the other. And instead of fighting in their own countries of Iran and Saudi Arabia, they're carrying their little war games out in Yemen.
Right.
And we're funding the Saudis, and they obliterate the place with bombs. There's very little left. I mean, it's so destroyed and so many people killed. So, we have to have a diplomatic solution to it and a rebuilding humanitarian, as Bernie Sanders says. So when the president vetoes it, I'm looking at that message and I'm thinking, okay, is it because Jared Kushner said, no, we got to support the Saudis,
Or is it that in the other ear you've got, John Bolton saying, hey, let's keep bombing them and keep poking Iran in the eye?
Right.
Yeah, nothing good there. And look, I don't think Kushner or Ivanka should be anywhere near the White House. Go back to selling your Chinese-made shirts and your bad products made overseas. I don't think you should be in the matter in policy making. And did you see the story today by the AP? And I think we all knew this, but evidently Ivanka said that daddy offered her the World Bank job, and she passed on it.
That's interesting. The World Bank job?
Yeah, you know, as the head of the World Bank. But there had been talk. There, her name was floated as it, and you know, obviously she, I don't want it. But evidently, he, according to her, he offered it to her, you know, because hey, you know, why not? She's as qualified a guest as anybody, right? No,
right.
You know.
Right. Oh my!
She has no qualifications whatsoever to be the head of you know, a Girl Scout troop, let alone the World Bank. You know, daddy's little girl needs a job. And that's the problem with nepotism. And again, we seem to be heading back towards the days of patronage and all of that now under this administration. It's scary.
Well, I think that this is a huge mistake on the Saudi Arabian resolution. And, you know, finally, Saudi Arabia is having people go, you know, out after them for the first time in ages. But you know, we'll just continue to fund this useless, hopeless situation over there because the Saudis want funding. And after all, don't they have enough money?
Yeah, absolutely.
Really?
Yeah, they should be funding us. Because did you see Jimmy Carter's comments? Evidently, Trump had called Carter, or there was a conversation between Trump and Carter. Did you see his comments on, you know, what was it? He said, you know, in our 242-year history, we've only had 16 years of peace. The Chinese, you know, they're not starting wars around the world. We're the ones who have been, you know, spending all of our treasure and all of our blood and sweat on these wars that don't really help us achieve anything. And this thing in Yemen, another example of that.
Right.
I mean, you think about all the money that we've just in the last couple of decades that we've pissed away on making big rocks smaller, or even small rocks smaller, even still. I mean, think of how many things we've dropped on Afghanistan. Can you blow it up anymore? Is it possible to turn sand into anything smaller?
Right. I mean, well, and this Yemen thing is just unbelievable.
Yeah, it's crazy to me. And this is one of those moments where, you know, I hope there are people on both sides of the aisle going, you know, because this did pass with some bipartisan support, right?
Oh yes, absolutely. Lindsey Graham is championing these things.
So, is there a possibility there's going to be a veto-proof majority that they override it?
No, there's not enough votes when you count that. No. No.
Look, at the end of it, the gun manufacturers and the bomb makers, they still have sway, I believe.
Yeah. Well, there just won't be enough votes over it. But people got on record, of course, so that, you know, they could take a position on this, because this is not going to end well over there. This is not going to get better.
No.
And then if there's any other scandal in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, at least they're on record going against the Saudis, like if they decide to cut somebody else up into pieces in the embassy.
Or maybe send Kushner over there. Let him buddy around with him.
They got away with it once. So.
Yeah. Well, look, I'm sure they've done it a number of times that we didn't even know about.
Correct.
But, you know, if Kushner's got this secret Middle East peace plan, I don't know what he's waiting on.
Well, I can tell you that. They're going to release a plan at some point in time, but here's the problem with it. You know, King Abdullah II is not involved in it. Nobody has been friendlier to the United States than the Jordanians. King Hussein, the late king. King Abdullah, the current king. His mother's American, Queen Noor. They've helped us. They've taken in Palestinian refugees when nobody else would. I mean, Jordan has been just, you know, top of the line with us, and we haven't shared one single bit of information with Jordan, and we need the Arab world. So they're going to unveil a plan, but it's going to be a peace plan that, unfortunately, no Arabs have looked at, you know, which if you're going to have an Israeli-Palestinian peace plan, you kind of do want to involve the Palestinians at some point in time.
Why, you think? Although I think we know what the plan is. Give us all what we want, or we're going to continue to blow you up.
And they've been settling pieces of it. The White House has, the Golan Heights, where the embassy's located. And it's not in negotiations. It's just the White House deciding that. So, again, I think that's the hand of Jared Kushner. And also, I must say, part of this, and I would be remiss if I didn't say this. also a great push on the president to down that Saudi Arabia resolution is coming from John Bolton. Anything that goes after Iran, John Bolton will do. You know, if you told John Bolton that he would advertise on your radio show and it would hurt Iran, he will buy ads from you tomorrow.
Really? Maybe we'll try that.
Yeah, try that. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't doubt it, though. I mean, because, you know, he's been one of those people who, you know, just been itching to bomb Iran for years. I mean, John McCain was another one. In fact, John McCain sang about it.
I knew John Bolton. I met with John Bolton. I used to tell my kids, I used to show him a picture of him and say, if you misbehave, this is your babysitter. So calm down.
And I'm sure they did.
They did.
Whatever that is growing on his lip, I'm sure scared him enough.
There you go.
Oh, that's crazy. But, you know, the thing is that, again, I go back to the Carter comment about, you know, how much money we've spent on wars and how much money we've spent, or the Chinese aren't. They're investing in infrastructure. They're investing in, and whether you believe with the technology that they've got is good or bad or indifferent, they're investing in the future. And we're just, we're making big rocks smaller. And the reality is we've got real problems. And I look at this Washington Governor Jay Inslee, who's running on climate change being, the center of his campaign. And I find it interesting that the Democrats, he floated the idea of a debate just on climate change. And the DNC is kind of, I don't know.
Well, they're not going to, I don't think they're going to do that. He's kind of got a issue here that he obviously is wrapped around. And there's more issues than, there's more issues than that. But I think that I'm not sure that the DNC's motive in saying no to this is just because they want to have other issues. I think they're a little afraid of the controversy of it.
Absolutely. Look, at the end of the day, there's a lot of people out there who don't want it. They want to know nothing about this because all they're concerned about is right now. They're worried about putting the food on the table today. They're worried about keeping a roof over their kids' head today. The idea of worrying about something that's going to be 10, 20, 30 years down the road, most people don't have that luxury. And the right will scare the hell out of those people by saying, oh, they're going to get rid of cars and cows and planes and all your jobs will be gone and you'll all be standing in the field looking at each other. We're already seeing that messaging coming out from the right.
And then also, too, I think this was a mistake of sorts. It's good to highlight the entire, the climate issue, obviously, and then separate people that try to still say that it's, science fiction is not true because, it is true. But when they put the plan out there, AOC and
Jeff
Senator Merkley in the Senate, if you're going to put a plan out there, define your plan and then, stick by it. And I don't know if they did enough groundwork with it. So now they have this fear factor. Well, once you put something out there, then, go with it. Of course, Mitch McConnell, and he said he'd have a vote. They weren't ready for one. So I think there's a lot of probably non-preparation right now for it. But it's not something that they can pretend that they don't care about. Now, as far as the DNC making it a one-issue thing, I don't know,
Right.
I don't know what. There's other issues. They can't just run on that.
No, they can't. But it's got to be something that they have a position on, because it's going to be an issue for Democrats.
They have to. Yeah. I mean, one time I remember one of my staffers. There was this big issue coming up, and a bunch of members, both sides of the aisle, were like, "What are we going to do? What are we going to do?" And one of my staffers looked at me and he said, "Oh, Lord forbid you all would have to make a controversial decision." He said, "You don't want to do that."
No. The people will fundraise.
I thought it was funny. I didn't fire him. I thought it was a little humorous.
Well, no, at least you had an office where people could speak up, and that's
healthy. Yeah.
That's somewhat healthy. Mm-hmm. But again, I look at this and it's just incredible to me. I also wanted to get your thoughts on North Korea. Since we were talking about Iran, you got to get North Korea. Did you see the report today that evidently there are reports that they've tested a new tactical weapon that I guess Kim Jong-un himself has overseen? Does this mean that the whole love affair, the we're so in love thing is over now with Trump?
No, I mean, I still think there's some things that are going to happen, but both sides cooled it for a while. They didn't get their ultimate agreement, so they cooled it. And this is sort of, I think, the chest thumping. I'm still hopeful that something will happen. We've tried so many times, and like I said, from at least my point of view, I supported Bill Clinton on giving money. I thought it was a good idea. If it works, so what? Who cares? Yeah. You know, who we help.
No, it's the same thing I am saying about Trump. Look, if this works, if this you know, if him going over there and doing that actually works, and we don't start blowing people up and things.
But I think it has cooled, and so we'll see. They're chest thumping. Maybe we reignite, some type of communication to South Korea with them, and China might step in. So we'll see what happens. But it's definitely a bump in the road, no doubt about that.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. And again, like I said, I just wanted to get your thoughts on it. Also, there's some talk about red states and Medicaid and all of this stuff. I've always been of the mindset that at some point the citizens in these states that are quote unquote red states, who haven't expanded Medicaid, who are getting screwed over by not having access to decent health care, at some point they wake up. But yet I see these governors of these red states, doubling down even further on limiting people's access to Medicaid, limiting their access to CHIP and other services. And you go, at some point, don't the voters wake up and throw these bums out?
I mean, they are doing this, and I'm looking at this, and you see the administrator of CMS, as it's called, and most people don't even know what it is, but Center for Medicaid and Medicare, she's an appointee, and she's wanting people to ask for waivers and restrictions. She wants to eventually make a rule to do a block grant to states.
Right.
Of course, if you do a block grant, once you do the block grant, you're out of money, nobody else comes on the rolls, right?
Right.
Unless the state makes the decision. Now, what's an irony about this, Rick, is let's do hypothetically. You're a red state governor, right? And you ask for two or three different changes from CMS that we just talked about, and they do it. And all of a sudden, the federal subsidy runs out, and you've got people literally in a horrible way who are going to their state legislators and saying, we've got to do something. What do you think's going to happen? You're going to be done with the Fed. You're going to dip into your state coffers.
I hope you're right. There's part of me that goes, no, they're just going to let those people die.
Now, I think the pressure amongst, I used to be a state legislator, the pressure would be so enormous. They think right now they're staving things off. I think it would make it worse. Plus, the system, if anybody doesn't want government run, if an entity, a red state, philosophically doesn't want a government-run, quote, program, single-payer, whatever you want to call it, if they don't want it, then you better take care of people to get them their basic needs at least, or you're going to have politically the engines all fired up to have a, quote, government-run system.
Right. Did you see the Fox News, the Fox Channel thing with Sanders, the town hall?
Yes.
Where, they asked, where this is one of those things where if you're a host, never ask a question that you don't know the answer to. Because, he said, how many people have, employer-sponsored health care, and, people raise their hand, and how many people want Medicare? And the room erupted. And I was shocked when I saw it. But the fact of the matter is, you're right. I mean, people have been getting screwed for so long. And while we're talking about single payer, the thing that we're not talking about is how bad employer-sponsored health care actually is.
And look, what is Medicare? It's a government-run system, correct?
Yeah.
And you put in money to it. If you have not put in a certain amount of money in your certain amount of income, then you go on Medicaid. Today, by the way, during my breaks, I'm doing radio for Ellen today, at 2, and I can tell you what time, 2:35 today, Rick, I sat down at Panera with a lady from Dublin, Ohio, and you know what I did?
What?
I pushed a button and signed up July 1st, Medicare.
Good for you.
And you know what? Don't you take my Medicare from me. it's like the clasping the gun in your hands. You're not going to take my Medicare from me.
From my cold, dead hands.
No, sir. And I got to tell you, it's a relief. And so, Medicare for all, especially for people who are struggling. Remember, a lot of registered Republicans have families, and they are struggling with health care. That's why you saw that response to Fox deal.
No, and this is one of those things where, as employers, it's amazing to me that employers want to continue what is an extraordinarily costly system for them. It's never made any sense to me why General Motors would want to continue to have to pay for health care when, you know, because we were hearing, you know, there's like $3,000 of health care in every car or $5,000 or whatever the number was. And it was always curious to me. I go, well, why do they continue to want to fight a system where they could be done with it? I mean, if it were me, I would say, you know, I don't want to do any of this. I don't want to provide retirement. I don't want to provide health care. I don't want to provide any of this. Let the state do it. Let the federal government do it. Have a plan that people can buy into and access. Mm-hmm. You know, look, the health care is one thing. Retirement security is another. I mean, there's no reason in my mind why there shouldn't be a fund with the PEESERs or like CalPERS does out in California, that in every state where you can buy into the state pension fund and have some bit of low cost, truly low cost pension options.
Right. I mean, look, you know more about unions than practically anybody in the country. You know how much of the discussion at the work sites about health care. You know?
Every contract I've ever been a part of.
You got it. And you would think the companies would want to embrace a different system where everybody pays in. Don't get me wrong, but yeah. But I thought that reaction was fascinating. By the way, I've got to give Bernie Sanders a lot of credit for doing the Fox event. And now Pete Buttigieg is trying to do one. I got to give him credit for doing it. Why not?
No, look, I've been saying for a very long time, the left, liberals, Democrats, whatever, you've got to be on Fox. The one thing that I've always given conservatives credit for, no matter what, they're willing to go into the lion's den, and even if they're going to take a beating, they're going to put their message out. I've had numerous conservatives on this show who, you know, they come in and, you know, we're having a discussion. They stick to their talking points, which is why I don't have them on. Because we don't really have discussions. They come in, they regurgitate their talking points, and we don't really have a discussion. But they're willing to go into those places and put out their ideas. And I've been saying for a long time, Democrats need to do it. In fact, when we were talking to Sirius about doing a program on Sirius XM, I wanted to be on the Patriot channel. I wanted to be on the right-wing channel. Because I said, those are the people that I need to talk to. I don't need to talk to people who agree with me. I don't want to go to the, you know, I don't want to be in the choir singing to the pews. I want the people who disagree with me.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But ultimately, it never panned out. It was what it was. But you know, that's where I thought you had to be. I think you need to engage people who don't agree with you and figure out how to come to some dialogue. And I thought Sanders did an outstanding job because look, I think he's authentic. I think he believes. What he says, and he's lived what he says.
Right. Right.
That that simple to me. And finally, I want to get into this thing with Billy Barr. Evidently, they've changed the hold policy for asylum seekers. What's that?
Well, okay. The Attorney General made a ruling on Tuesday, and of course, a lot of it got overshadowed due to, you know, the report coming out on the Mueller deal. But anyway, he made a change, and so the change would allow the decision through Homeland Security, basically, as to whether a person can get a bond or not. In other words, they come in, they have some situation where they have some fear or an issue to be able to, where we say, yes, we'll look at an asylum case and we'll judge it, yes or not, you know, no. Well, this allows for them to be indefinitely detained while that whole process goes through, instead of, you know, leaving and then reporting back in order to get their asylum. Now, again, these are not people that walk through and say, hey, you know, somebody tried to beat me up, and we go, oh, okay, go ahead, go run around. These are people that, you know, go through the process, they're interviewed, and we believe that there is, you know, some type of factor they have to fear, et cetera. But again, when he changed this rule, then they could be indefinitely detained. And, of course, if you're indefinitely detained, you have to do what? You have to put them somewhere, you know, and then who pays for that and how's that carried out, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So he changed the rules yesterday.
And this has been – how long have these rules been in place that they've changed?
Oh, I think they've been in place for, you know, for quite a while, that you always have the ability to, you know, for an advocate or a lawyer to ask for, you know, I'll call it a bond, bail, whatever you want to call it, you know. like a bond. They've always had the ability for that to be asked for. Now, certain cases or suspicions or people or criminal activity, it's a whole different world.
Right.
You know, of how they detain you.
Yeah, because I can just hear my conservative friends going, well, you know, the Obama did all this. I'm going, you know, our immigration problems have been long standing. You know, back to the days of Reagan.
Well, yeah, and yes, they are. And the other thing is, you know, I can cite you examples in the Obama administration that you would say, really? Or you wouldn't, but probably somebody listening to the show would say, really? He did that? Yeah. You know, Bush, he did that? He let five Mexicans go? Really? Yes. So, you know, you start to look at these. So there's these kind of unusual things that happen. But then again, each president puts certain marks of how they want to run immigration, right? And that's why Congress at some point in time needs to drop all the nonsense against each other and make comprehensive A to Z immigration rules and reform.
Yeah.
So we know the game plan.
Well, again, I don't ever see that happening, but, you know,
I doubt it.
I guess you can always hope, right?
Yes, sir.
I guess so. Bob, well, I appreciate the time. Always fun
you.
Talking with you.
You too. Thanks.
Thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it. Bob Ney, Talk Media News. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.